Glad to have you with us for Retire Right. I'm back with Alan Becker, founder and president of Retirement Solutions Group, and our special guest, Bruce Willey, is here. And Bruce, well, he specializes in helping mid to small-sized businesses across the country help them navigate business and tax law. And this comes up in a lot of different situations that business owners really need a partner, need some help with. And Bruce is answering Alan's questions today. So if you're a business owner, small business owner, or maybe you're just someone who's thinking about retirement, you want to know how you can be more tax efficient, this is a conversation for you. Bruce is with American Tax and Business Planning. We sure are glad to have him here. And Alan, you've been rapid firing these questions at Bruce, and it sounds like he's up for the challenge.
He is. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years, and when we started, you know, we had one office, and now we've grown to, you know, we've got our main office in Overland Park. We've got the two satellites out in Lee Summit and Briarcliff. And as we've gotten bigger and, you know, we've needed some extra help. So I reached out to Bruce, who was recommended to me from some colleagues. And it's worked wonders. I mean, knowing what, you know, well, first off, you don't know what you don't know. And learning some of these tools have really been beneficial to my family and just proper planning, right? So let's talk a little about that. I mean, I know there's a lot of talk about tax rates potentially changing some more at the higher levels, but some of the ideas will affect all of us. I mean, I've heard a lot of talk about eliminating step up at basis. Now, step up at basis, for those of you that don't know, it basically means the value of whatever the asset was, it could be real estate, it could be stocks, is stepped up to the value of whoever left it to you when they passed away. So from that, Bruce, what can you tell us about how that might affect us in a tax realm if that does change for us? And I know that can kind of even move into estate taxes and how those are going to change.
Yeah, Alan, that's a really interesting area. You know, there's been talk for years that they're going to try to get away or do away with the step up in basis. And the step up in basis is one of the key mechanisms that families can use to pass wealth on from generation to generation and minimize their estate tax. And the current push to eliminate or reduce the effectiveness of the step up in basis is something that a lot of practitioners across the country are paying attention to. But what it does is you buy a share of Apple at, you know, $25 when it first came out, and now it's split and it's trading in the 150s or 130s. I don't know the stock market like you do, but what it does is, you know, now somebody's gonna have to pay tax on the difference between the $25 and the current trading value. And so you can see the potential asset accumulation that the government may be able to tax upon elimination of the step up in basis. But what the government officials who advance this, in my opinion, don't often think about is, what's the cash effect of this? What's the effect upon the family receiving the stock? And are we now asset rich and potentially cash poor? And I know you can sell the stock and you can do different things, but they're talking about potentially taxing the gift at the time of death so that you start over with the new basis, but you've had to pay tax on it and you may not necessarily have liquidated the asset. And so it's all at the speculative phase right now, but it can have a really profound effect on almost every family in America that has any sort of savings whatsoever. And so we are paying particular attention to that when we talk to clients about asset protection and estate planning of, you know, how can we potentially mitigate that and work to transfer as much wealth as possible for, you know, and make it as high a basis as possible to the recipient so that we can not have to pay tax on the full appreciation of the asset. So it's, you know, if you think about farms and other real estate intensive businesses, it's really a profound effect because you're asset rich and cash poor in a lot of those situations. So it's something we're really looking at.
Farm's a good example. If you know, mom and dad bought the farm for $200,000 and you get it for $1 million, you got $800,000 that you have to pay taxes on. And I think it's like 9 months, right? It's pretty quick. And in a business like that, what are you supposed to do? Fire sell the farm? I mean, that sounds like it could be very detrimental. And doesn't that also bring up some of the recapture, even on a stock, the dividends paid each year? Or I know there's other tax laws talking about maybe, you know, truing them up at the end of the year. Some of those issues could really in essence, form some form of double taxation. So I know this isn't all out there in the open yet. A lot of it's speculation, but I think we need to have, you know, one ear listening and have a solution, an advisor, a firm, somebody that you can go talk to get this advice. And we always recommend, you know, talk to your tax professional, but my experience has been not all tax professionals are fully versed in this. I little brave saying what I'm about to say with interviewing with my own CPA here, but you know, my brother's also a CPA, but I'm using you, Bruce, and you know, I was kind of jokingly say my brother's a car parking attendant, parks, you know, numbers and spots. And that's my experience with a lot of CPAs, that they really, you know, do taxes, you know, sometime around, you know, St. Patty's Day to April 15th. That's when everybody wants them, because that's when we got to get returns done. To get the real analysis, you know, that's a different type of CPA, right?
Yeah, you know, Alan, that's a really interesting topic, and I have to, you know, I always respect my colleagues, but I'm actually an attorney and a CPA, so I wear a couple different hats, but I find looking at people's tax returns, particularly business tax returns, that there are a lot of errors made day in and day out. Either people haven't kept up with what's going on in the current environment. They don't understand how to do something. For instance, one of the things that we look at whenever we review a return for somebody on the business side is the qualified business income deduction that came in under the Trump tax bill in 2017. You know, that income, the QBI deduction, was intended to give business owners a reduction in taxable income so that the tax rates between a C corp and an S corp would be similar enough that people wouldn't jump to C corps. And I find routinely that probably 30 to 40% of the returns that I look at, that the QBI calculation has not been done correctly. And in some cases, it's been totally missed altogether. And in fact, I have an audit going on right now, somebody I did not prepare the return for, but they asked me to represent them in the audit. And we discovered that the QBI hadn't been calculated correctly, and the taxpayer was going to lose the other audit issues, but the QBI deduction actually is going to make them money. The IRS is going to owe them money because the QBI calculation wasn't done correctly. And by us coming in and doing the calculation correctly, it offsets all the tax they owe, plus they get a little bit of money back in their pocket. So I would tell you that there is a pretty broad disparity in the people out there that are doing taxes, and you need to find the appropriate level of help for your situation and the questions you ask. And if you don't get a good answer to them, then that person may not be the right person to be working with.
I love that you said that, because it could be your relative, it could be a friend, it could be somebody you've been working with for years, and maybe you consider them a friend. But, you know, sometimes we get bigger and we need bigger advice. Sometimes we just are looking for a second opinion, because to learn if there's a better way to do something. That's why my team put together this guide, Are You Paying Too Much in Taxes in Retirement? How a Retirement Income Analysis Can Help You Blunt the Tax Bite in Retirement. Great information, chock full of stuff you can use right now. I want to make sure you have that available. All you have to do is text the word advice to 474747, and then Madison will get that out to you. She's our marketing director, and she will also be sending you a link to our calendar. If you are interested, we will give you 15 minutes Q&A with an advisor so that you can potentially get your questions answered and see if we need to invite you in for a one-on-one consultation, maybe do it via Zoom, or continue that phone call, whatever works best for you. But we're here to help. Just text the word advice to 474747. Bruce, I'm really enjoying this conversation. I appreciate it. I hope everybody's learning a lot. You know, property is obviously one that scares me the most on this step-up basis that we've been talking about. But they're also talking about capital gains increases, which, I mean, if you're in the market, that could potentially affect everybody that uses the market, right? And then, you know, so let's start there. What can you tell me about capital gains and what you see maybe from what you've read or have investigated on how that may affect us in the future?
Well, Alan, so, you know, about a week and a half ago, I spent about 5 hours in a webinar with some people that I spend a lot of time with, talking about changes in tax law and what's going on in the world. And this was one area of potential change from the new administration that, I don't know, I guess I don't get scared or angry about taxes very often, but this one was really chilling because it sounded like a very, very difficult plan to implement and a lot of headaches for taxpayers and preparers if they go ahead with this proposal. But there's two primary proposals that are being kicked around. One is that the capital gain rate is going to go from 20% to 40%, which is astounding, that you've in most cases used after-tax money to acquire an investment, and then they're going to turn around and tax the gain on that at a higher rate than your ordinary income is taxed at. So I don't know how that'll play out over time. We haven't seen any law on it, but that's just one of the proposals coming out of the advisors that President Biden has brought into office with him. The second proposal is that they're actually considering taxing the value of your stock portfolio at the end of the year, whether you've liquidated the stock or not, which mm-hmm. sounds to me like a huge nightmare. And it's going to have to involve significant changes in the way capital losses are recognized and able to be deducted as well, or it's going to have just a really, really profound effect on anybody that's been able to save a few dollars over their lifetime and heading into retirement. It's really almost too daunting to even think about because of the scope of the record keeping on it would be amazing.
Well, I've heard that one, and that one scares me too. I mean, some people refer to the stock market as the Wall Street casino, and so let's just use a casino. That'd be like, okay, it's midnight, you've got chips on the table, let's stop, we're going to pull 40% or whatever the percentage is off the table right now because we're going to go ahead and pay tax. Now stay in the game and keep risking it. That sounds almost ludicrous and crazy. I mean, the record keeping, yes, but the money's still in play. You haven't, accepted the losses or the gains yet. So, and we use those losses to offset gains to balance portfolio. So it sounds like a slippery slope. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm the first one to tell you, we are $30 trillion in debt. We've got to make some adjustments. I'm all for tax reform, and that needs to happen. We've got to get out from under the debt. But we need to make sure we do it in the right way and that it makes sense for sure. I know if you're selling a building, there's still some stuff that's been on the books for a while that works really well that I like is opportunity zones. I mean, can you real quick touch on that for us?
Yeah, opportunity zones are actually a newer creation, but they're really a powerful way to mitigate capital gains income and to generate a stream of income. And so what essentially happens is if you invest in a qualified opportunity zone and you remain in it for a number of years, first you get a step up in basis on the asset that you sold to begin the process, and you get a deferral of the timeline to pay the taxes on that initial transaction. And then if you stay in the qualified opportunity zone long enough, it's really cool because you actually avoid capital gain on the second transaction. So when you liquidate the qualified opportunity zone investment, if you've stayed in it long enough, you actually don't pay any tax on that at all. And so we see the number of vendors providing qualified opportunity zone opportunities springing up all over the country. And they have, it's just like anything, though. You have to really, really investigate the project and the people that are running it and determine, what's really good and what's might not be so good about it and choose your vendors carefully. But it's really a cool little tool that they put in place to try to encourage reinvestment in America from the liquidation of gains. So that'd be something that if you have any property of significant gain, there's a number of ways you can reduce the taxes on that now and maybe avoid taxes on the second layer. So it's something you definitely should consider.
Our conversation with Bruce Willey continues. You're listening to Retire Right. Stay tuned.